This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're going to the surface of the planet Earth, Boca Chica, Texas. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black, keeping watch on commercial space and nothing more spectacular than SpaceX. But now, not only SpaceX successfully launching and recovering, not only SpaceX planning launches from the equator, but SpaceX planning Super Heavy combined with Starship to make a trip to the moon and Mars? Question mark. Bob, a very good evening to you. What about Super Heavy? What's new here?
Well, all right, John. This is, you know, we just came out of the Memorial Day weekend, and so, you know, I was away, took a vacation caving up in remote country when nobody was around. So I come home, and I'm looking over the news in space over the weekend, and I come across a whole slew of stories, most of them on a website called Teslarado, which focuses on Elon Musk's companies, but not all. But a slew of stories describing a variety of things going on in connection with SpaceX's developing Super Heavy / Starship reusable giant rocket. And all these stories are pointing in one direction, and they really are pointing with increasing focus in one direction, really beginning to be like a magnifying glass, focusing in a point. Well, first of all, there was a report that locals in the McGregor, Texas area, which is where SpaceX has its static fire engine testing facility, where it builds its engines, essentially, the locals there had by sound indicated that SpaceX has now completed a full duration burn of its Raptor engine, and this is a launch burn. Apparently the rocket was in a static fire test and it fired for more than 5 minutes. Now, the Raptor engines they've been using on the Starship flights, those short hops, they fire, there's three of them on each flight, and they tend to fire between 1 and 3 minutes total. When they launched the rocket with the Super Heavy first stage attached below, the first heavy Super Heavy has to fire its engines for probably no less than 5 minutes, probably a little more than that, before they'll cut the engines, there'll be a stage separation, and then the Starship will continue on. And then those engines, some of them have to fire again on the Super Heavy to bring it back and land it. And so this is appears the longest test fire of the Raptor engine. And then there was another story that talked about how SpaceX is revealing new engine configurations for that Super Heavy. That Super Heavy is going to have, it appears now, the first version of it is not going to have 28 engines in two rings, concentric rings, but it's going to have 29 engines. And on top of that, they're talking about building subsequently a more powerful version that will have 32 engines.
These are Raptors, right? You're talking about
all Raptor engines. Yes. Yes, at the base of Super Heavy. Imagine 29 engines at the bottom, not 9 as in Falcon 9, but 29. And they'll up it to 32 in a later version. And one of the articles I read also pointed out that with the 32 engine, even in its weakest combination of engines, the 29 engines, even before they have boosted the Raptor's abilities in its present configuration, it's going to be 60% more powerful than the Saturn V rocket that launched the astronauts to the moon. That's 60% more powerful, and it's going to be able to launch repeatedly, quickly, reusably, and for pennies on the dollar.
Bob, the Starship now that we've been watching test, how many engines did they put in the Starship?
They put, for those tests, they have three engines. The reports are talking about anywhere from 6 to 8 engines on Starship in its final configuration. I think 6 is the present expected number. It's a very powerful, this is the most powerful engine right now that anyone has built.
And
so that's the second story of those, all those engines, John. There's more. The development program, they're focusing on the launch pad. They're beginning to get ready to do that. In the process of completing the first tank tests on the second Super Heavy prototype, once completed, they can start adding engines to it and maybe do, be able to do tests. But everything is pointing. Another story from Business Insider pointed to a tweet from Musk where he pointed out this past weekend that they are almost finished refurbishing one of the two oil rigs they purchased, floating oil rigs, and they're aiming to have one ready by next year for launching and landing of Super Heavy Starship. All this points to them aiming for that near orbital first flight with Super Heavy and Starship on top before the end of the year, and it really looks like before the end of the summer.
29 Raptors, right? That's the idea. That's 29 correct. Raptors, and that's they're right. going to do that by the end of this summer, you think?
Well, that's a good question. If it's the first test flight, the flight plan they submitted to the FCC, it's not a full orbit. They take off from Boca Chica, they orbit three-quarters of the globe, and they land, splash down in the Pacific Ocean to the northwest of Hawaii. And there's reasons not to do an orbital flight the first time, but that would be practically orbital. The difference between that and an orbital flight would be minimal. Wouldn't be carrying any major payloads. They'd basically be testing the takeoff return and working of the two, I think, units together. But we're talking about, yes, maybe by the end of the summer. They might not have that many engines because of the lack of a payload and, you know, other testing considerations. But if they do that launch, let's say, with half the engines and successfully do a near-orbital flight, you're not going to wait long before they go to the full configuration. They're not going to waste time. They're clearly not wasting time here. And it's just really astonishing, and it's really it's beyond astonishing, in a sense, the pace they're setting here. And it sure does appear that all the pieces are falling into place and that the next year or so could be by far the most exciting year in space exploration.
All right, one more time, Bob. What is your estimate of when they'll do an orbital flight? This year?
I think that if their schedule as presently developing goes forward, they will do that near-orbit flight, almost a complete orbital flight. They'll attempt it this year, and they will be moving towards an orbital flight by next year.
Okay.
They are very close to beating SLS into orbit at this point in time, very close. And even if they don't make it, the development pace they're setting, you know, tortoise hare, they will bypass the tortoise very quickly, I think, next year.
All right. International news time. New Zealand signs the Artemis Accords. What is that, Bob?
Well, first, it's not just New Zealand. I want to put these together. We had South Korea early in the weekend sign the Artemis Accords, and then New Zealand followed through the next day signing the Artemis Accords. And that makes 11 countries, including the U.S., that have signed the Artemis Accords. Now, what are the Artemis Accords? Artemis Accords was a bilateral agreement that countries would sign with the U.S., if they wish to partner with us in our Artemis program to get back to the moon and do further exploration. If they want to partner with us, they've got to sign these agreements. And the Artemis Accords are designed basically as an end around of the provisions of the Outer Space Treaty that put limitations on private property rights in space. That's the main purpose of the Artemis Accords. And so far, 11 countries have signed it. That's Austria, Canada, Italy, Japan, Luxembourg, South Korea, the United Kingdom, the United Arab Emirates, the Ukraine, and the United States. And I put that together on a list on a post on Behind the Black because I wanted to say, well, who hasn't signed it? Well, China and Russia have said they oppose these accords. These accords are designed to do what Western nations do, which is devolve power to the private citizen or private companies. The government doesn't control everything. It's bottom-up society. China and Russia are both top-down authoritarian societies. They oppose these accords because they want the government to control everything. What's interesting is that the European nations, Germany and France, have not signed these accords at this point. And the European Space Agency is not a nation, so it really doesn't sign these accords either. But that Germany and France have not yet signed, and France especially has always been a major player in the European Space Agency, is interesting. The European Space Agency is in negotiations with China on the subjects of space cooperation, including their base and their space station. And so I'm looking at this and saying, well, gee, if Germany and France haven't signed this yet, could it be that they're really thinking of moving over and partnering with the what is the modern Soviet bloc of China and Russia, and that maybe could be the set case. We might be seeing the first true and permanent political split in that alliance from the Cold War from between mainland Europe and the United States here. And I should point out, too, that if European Space Agency splits here, or at least France and Germany, this is a problem for Orion capsule because it depends on a service module that the European Space Agency is building. NASA didn't have the money to pay for an American company to build it, so it made a barter deal with the European Space Agency. But if they don't sign the Artemis Accords, then we can't. In the end, we're not going to be using their equipment, and they won't be partnering with us.
That means
Orion doesn't have a service module, or it's not built.
I've got a replacement, Bob. Canada. Canada will do it because they're already taking contracts for NASA.
Yes, this is an interesting sign. This is ties into the Artemis Accords. They are a signatory. They have signed an agreement with NASA to build an unmanned lunar rover to the moon. And, you know, NASA has been giving out a lot of contracts to private companies to build rovers, landers to the moon. Well, so, now Canada's done this, and Canada isn't going to build a rover, but it's going to follow the lead of NASA and my policy paper suggestions, recommendations, and it's going to select private companies to design and build it for the Canadian government. Now, they haven't said exactly when this is going to launch, maybe too early to do this, but Canada is now a partner in Artemis, and it's now getting in the game of building components that will go to the moon. It's once again, the number of missions we're talking about going to the moon, manned and unmanned, in the next 5 years is about a dozen, and that's pretty astonishing.
It's a thing, Bob. It's a thing. A commercial space augments this, of course, but nations are getting involved in a fashion that we did not see in the 20th century. They clearly have a public that's interested. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to advance this money.
There's another component, which has to do with competition. Instead of cooperating, and well, they might be cooperating with each other in some ways, but they're competing for achievements. And not just in terms of private enterprise, at least to the West, they're competing for profit. But that's also fueling the competition between nations, because since the U.S. now is beginning to really forge ahead with commercial flights, other countries like Russia and China are feeling pressure. They've got to keep up with the Joneses. So competition here is feeding this by a lot.
All right, the other team. We have to represent them, Bob. China finally got that freighter off the ground. What was the holdup? Do we know?
We don't really know, and they won't probably tell us. They might eventually, but when no one will care. But China finally launched the first cargo freighter called Tianzhou, to its first module in orbit, Tianhe, of its space station, which is now under construction. They're going to be launching modules over the next year and a half. And they docked this freighter to it, unmanned, so that it would have the supplies and equipment and could maintain the orbit of this one module, because they plan to follow it up in probably only a few weeks with a launch of three astronauts to their station for a period of 3 months. And those astronauts will be there to unload the cargo, to do preliminary construction. There's probably things like attaching solar panels and putting solar panels out, and other things I don't even know that will involve with the assembly of this station. And these guys are going to go up to do it. And so that they've launched it, and their construction is ongoing right now.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're headed to the surface of Mars. To the brave little toaster that flies. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.